Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live daily afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Lynell Engelmeyer joins us this afternoon. She's a certified educational planner with over 20 years of experience in college admissions and financial aid. Currently has had her own college counseling practice. Lynell volunteers to work with underrepresented students through a local and a national not-for-profit and is the author of a college admission and financial aid workbook entitled Moving Forward, What Teens and Parents Need to Know in the Years Leading to College. Lynell, welcome back to the show. It's been a while.
Great. Thank you so much for having me.
You were last on when?
I don't remember.
I don't remember either. I barely remember yesterday. Give us a call, 1-800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or you can tweet us at WAMCVoxPop, or you can go to our Facebook page. It's WAMC Radio. There'll be a Vox Pop post there. Or, once again, tweet us at WAMCVoxPop. You can email as well, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number on this call-in program is 800-348-2551. So, as I mentioned, it's been a while since you've been on. And changes. And the one that will rock many a world is the changes forthcoming in the financial aid system.
There is a big change on the horizon. It will actually not affect this year's high school seniors who will be applying for financial aid for the first time.
Yeah.
It will affect this year's high school juniors when they apply for financial aid the first time.
Now, how big of a change are we looking at here?
Well, it's a change that should hopefully be helpful. It should actually make things easier, though the government has managed to give it a name that sounds absolutely no easier. It's called the PPY, or the prior year.
Well, the government usually makes things easier, so I'm sure it'll be fine.
Right, exactly. Actually, what it is it's an attempt to allow families to get a handle on what they will have to pay earlier in the cycle of the college admissions process. Right now, when you apply for financial aid, you cannot apply until after January 1st. Of the year in which the student will start college.
And so by then, you've already had your application in.
Your applications are in, but you really have no idea if you can afford these schools, and you can't apply till, you know, after January 1st. And so by the time you apply and get a financial aid package back, you're looking at easily March, maybe April, and you owe a school a decision in May, May 1st. So it's cutting it pretty close by the time you have all of the information on the table in front of you. And so in an attempt to help families get a handle on getting beyond the sticker price of a college and really understanding what you individually will actually have to pay, rather than using the prior tax year, the last completed tax year, they are now using the prior year, which in essence is 2 years before the kid goes to school.
So is that helpful in the long run?
It is helpful in the long run because it will allow families to apply earlier and hence get a financial aid package back earlier and then be able to make more educated decisions without waiting until kind of the 11th hour.
Mm. So assuming that you have done the PPY and you have figured out what you have to pay, and you've gotten either the loans or whatever else you need to do to pay, then do you have to do this every year, assuming a four-year degree?
One has to apply for financial aid every single year. And then, you know, if one goes to grad school, it becomes every year at that point, too.
Okay.
That's not the good news in all of this.
So tell me about this coalition app. What is this?
Well, that seems to be kind of the real hot topic of discussion in college admission circles right now. Every year in late September, early October is the largest gathering of college admissions professionals. It's called NACAC, which is the National Association for College Admission Counselors.
NACAC.
And the session on the coalition application before the session even started, had to be moved repeatedly to accommodate what they knew would be a very large crowd, which ended up being several hundred people.
Really?
Because it's causing all kinds of angst and things like that. It's the alleged purpose of it is to...
You sound skeptical.
Is to, note the skepticism, is to help make college admissions more accessible to underrepresented students.
Okay. Well, that's a noble purpose.
Absolutely. But here comes the skepticism. It is intended to help students start recording their performance beginning in ninth grade.
Oh.
And there is a portfolio to it, a portfolio component. So, you know, if you wrote a really brilliant paper in ninth grade or you did an amazing piece of photography in a particular class, that it would allow you to save these things as you go along so that by the time 12th grade rolls around and you apply to college, you have this great representation of your work throughout high school. The problem with it and some of the criticism of it is that we seem to be having enough trouble, we as a country, helping students navigate the process when they're 17.
Right.
You know, to introduce them to this process and to ask them to think about these things when they are 14 will take a whole different approach.
But doesn't that ultimately serve a better purpose if students, kids, become more focused a little earlier?
Theoretically, yes. Not all students have the maturity to do that. Not all of them have had the exposure to make, you know, oftentimes it's not until maybe 11th grade or so that they've had a job or had an internship or had some exposure to something and they think to themselves, gee, this might be an interesting career. And the Coalition app certainly doesn't prohibit that, but it does it. The question has arisen more than once. Does it create more stress? And will it just allow for more working of the system for more affluent students?
Okay, well, that's always going to be a consideration. But stress, perhaps our, and just being devil's advocate, perhaps our society has not put enough stress on kids to perform. And maybe that's part of the issue in sort of the lax performance we see educationally.
I think some people, you know, the high school certainly, you know, in this area, some of the high schools that are very competitive who are sending, you know, multiple early decision applicants to Ivy League schools and things like that would disagree with that. I think it's really about doing a better job of educating kids and creating a college-going culture earlier. And you know, Ray, before we got online, you and I talked about the comment that Rubio made last night.
During the debate.
In the debate,
yeah.
About the fact that, you know, vocational education has really, has kind of a negative stigma
attached
to it.
Yeah, there's a stigma attached.
And I tell people all the time, I think it's a great thing. There are jobs to be had. There is money to be made in these fields. And so I don't necessarily believe that everybody has to have a four-year degree. Statistically speaking, is it a way to higher income over the course of your lifetime? Yes, it is. My contention is that I would like every student to have the opportunity to have a four-year degree. Whether a child and a family wish to avail themselves of that should be their choice.
Here's the flip side to the argument I made, the devil's advocate argument about this Coalition app, is that oftentimes focus isn't attained until you're halfway through college or even after college.
Absolutely. And it's a maturity. Some of it is just regular old developmental, you know, maturity and growth. And certainly we leave, you know, need to leave those doors open for everybody. It's also why I don't necessarily believe that everybody should go to college at 18.
Hmm. Well, that's a good point as well. Linnell Engelmeyer is our guest. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Tell you what, let's take one call at least before the break, and then we will get into the phone calls more steadily as we go on. Kurt and Troy. Kurt, you're first.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
I wanted to ask about federal student loans and repayment practices. I understand that graduates from college who graduated and are in a low-income situation after graduation, that there are deferments available for those federal loans. Is that correct?
That is correct. There are actually a couple different options. There is a, I believe, a graduated payment or an income contingent option. They're usually deferments have often occurred because of things like unemployment or things like that. But there are the standard repayment term on a student loan is 10 years. For people who are in a low-income situation, a graduated payment or an income-dependent payment option might really be the best way to go. My suggestion to you for places to look, my personal resource when I need financial aid information is I go to a website called FinAid, F as in Frank, I, N like Nancy, A, I, D like David, .org, finaid.org. And if it's probably the best repository of financial aid information out there, very, very accurate. But then the other option is to call the servicer of your student loan. If it were me, I would do a little of my own homework first so that at least you know what questions to ask when you do call the servicer.
Okay. Hey, that's great. Thank you very much.
Good luck.
Kurt, thanks a lot for the call. Our number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. We're joined today by Lynell Engelmeyer, and you kind of get the gist of where we're going with today's program. So call if you have a question. We'll take a short break, and we'll be back to more of the phones in a moment.
Support for WAMZ comes from Noble Home, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Custom-designed panelized house kits featuring eco-friendly passive and solar design elements, noble-home.net. Lori Stillwell, CPA PC, providing tax and accounting services for businesses and their owners in Saratoga Springs and beyond, stillwellcpa.com. Shannon Rose Design, Saratoga Springs, New York, working to help companies and organizations express their identities through corporate branding, web design and development, and graphic design for almost three decades, shannonrose.com. Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Over 300 flavors of handcrafted dairy and dairy-free ice creams, cakes, hot fudge, and more, harolds.com. And Capital Roots, providing fresh food for the Capital Region for over 40 years. Grow, educate, provide, capitalroots.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Lynell Engelmeyer joins us every once in a while. She's here today. The number to call is 800-348-2551. Let's go to Carrie in Plainville. Carrie.
Hi, Ray. Hey, good music there.
Oh, God. I just put it in today. That's Count Basie from 1979. Booty Wood on the plunger trombone. It just kills me every time. Thank you for noticing.
Being that today's Veterans Day, it's a great time to bring up my suggestion. That is VA educational benefits under the GI Bill.
Okay.
Something I took advantage of in 1972.
Well, and first of all, thank you for serving, and to everybody else who is listening, thank you for your service. If you look at the trends in higher education, what you'll notice is it was really the GI Bill that changed the rates of college attendance drastically. And really, I think that and the civil rights movement, college going rates increased very, very significantly. And I do think it is a tremendous way to go and not only help get your education paid for, but also help identify maybe what you want to do before you start investing all that money.
Exactly.
And haven't figured it out. So thank you for making the suggestion, because I think it is a very, very worthwhile
and can
one.
Can I say one more thing for me personally? Excuse me. It was a major plus in me seeking employment later.
Mm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, Carrie, hey, thanks a lot, man, for all you've done, and thanks for calling.
Okay, thanks.
Zip, see ya. 1-800-348-2551. Jim in Albany. Jim, you're next.
Hey, Ray, how are you?
Good.
Good. And Lynell, hi. Hey,
yeah.
Thanks for your good comments on the GI Bill. That was a great call. GI Bill, civil rights movement, and the other big factor in the college rates was the Cold War, the competition with Russia. Mm. So my question is, what are we doing to get these kids ready at the age of 14? for a balanced physical and mental education. The physical education, where is that today?
You know, I think as you look at and listen to the press talk about rates of obesity, that the answer to that is probably fairly simple. We're probably not doing quite enough.
Why not? Where are the doctors and the teachers who led the first physical education movement back in the 1820s to get the people ready for the westward movement from Troy out to Buffalo? Where are the doctors and the teachers today to get together and lead the physical education movement? These kids are not in shape, are they? And Eisenhower was concerned about that. He got the President's Committee on Youth Fitness set up in 55.
You know, I my opinion, and this is just one person's opinion, but my opinion is that there is so much focus on testing and testing in classrooms that often when something has to give, it is that which is not on the test. And
are you in favor of the testing, Linnell? All the emphasis on mental testing and no emphasis on physical testing?
I will tell you, and I'm very open to the students that I work with about this, that I think we completely over-test kids.
Thanks. That's great. Thank you very much, and thank you, Ray.
Hey, Jim, I got to say that, you know, having five in the school system now, there is a focus on physical education, at least to some extent, maybe not as much as when we were kids, but there certainly is, and there are certainly benchmarks they have to hit. So,
thank you, Ray.
Yeah, maybe not all is lost, but thanks a lot for the call. 1-800-348-2551. Back to the phones. We'll go in a moment. This one came in, Linnell, via email. This is from Laura, who says, I teach career and financial management to freshmen. We are doing portfolios in Career Zone, participating in a lot of career exploration, looking at how to find a job, writing resumes, etc. In career and college prep, I have juniors and seniors. Every single student said they wished they had participated in career and college activities earlier. They said they wish they had taken their freshman year more seriously. We have used Career Zone, Human Metrics, My College Options, College 101, CollegeToolkit.com, etc. What is the most important thing I should teach, expose these students to? Materials, resources, websites. We talk about entrepreneurship, apprenticeships, college, VistaCorps, AmeriCorps, etc. I've talked to them about 529 plans. We are creating e-portfolios right now. And do you guest speak is Laura's question, but there are a lot of questions there.
There are a lot of questions, and the one thing that I do when I ask kids, and I always preface this question with, by telling my students, I hate this question, but I do ask it anyway because I haven't figured out a better one to ask. But at 16 years old, when I typically meet with students, I ask them, do you have any thoughts about what you would like to do or what you would like to major in? And the reason I really don't like the question is because I think it's a kind of a stressful question because kids feel like they're supposed to know, but oftentimes they don't know. What I think is more important than what do you want to do are two things. Number one, where are the job trends? You know, there are certain jobs that when kids tell me it's what they want to do, I cringe just a little on the inside because I know what the job outlook is. And so if I have somebody tell me, I'll give you as an example, that they want to be a lawyer. And right now, lawyers are having very, very hard time getting jobs out of law school, or at least a good number of them. And so what I say is, okay, so what can you do? If that's really your passion, absolutely pursue it. But what can you do to specialize to make yourself more appealing in that field? For example, a lawyer with a hard science background will have some other options. That may make them more employable. The other thing I like to do is I like to look at the surveys of what employers want. Because even if you have no earthly clue what you want to do, you can start skill building. And I think that that is a great thing. And so most employers, pretty much universally at the top of the list of things that employers want their employees to be able to do and they feel like they don't do well enough, is to be able to communicate orally and in writing. And, you know, so even if you say, well, I really don't know what I want to do, or alternately, you know, I want to go into science, you know, really focus on those skills because you will make yourself much more employable. The one resource that you did not mention that is probably my favorite is the Occupational Outlook Handbook.
Mm.
If you just Google Occupational Outlook Handbook, it'll come up. It's a .gov extension. The reason that I like it is because you can key in a field of a career. It will tell you what education you need for that particular career. It will give you things like the growth rate of that career. It will give you median income information for that career. It will also give you related fields. The flip side is that you can also say, well, I'd like to major in a particular field. What can I do with that field? And it will then tell you these are careers related to that field.
Our number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. Linnell Engelmeyer is our guest, and we'll get right back to the phones in a moment. Mia in Albany, you'll be next. Okay, let me ask you philosophically, as both a professional and a parent, at what point do you have to... At what point are you too coldly analytical about future prospects? And do you then at what point risk squelching a dream or squelching a talent and say, well, this just, look, you want to be an astronaut. Look, son, it's not going to happen.
I'm not a big believer in squelching dreams, although sometimes I do affectionately refer to myself as Linnell Engelmeyer Dream Killer, but that's usually a...
well, I'll have to remember that for the next intro.
A financial aid assessment and not a career one. I truly believe that young people ought to follow their passion and what they love, but I think that can often be married with where the careers are, where the jobs are, what kinds of skills employers are looking for. If you want to be an elementary school teacher, what can you do to make yourself stand out in a crowd when a particular district might be getting 200 or 300 resumes for a job? And there are things that you can do. And so I encourage students to say, okay, this is what I want to do. It's a pretty crowded marketplace. How do I make myself stand out? And if you're truly dedicated to that, I say by all means do it.
Linnell Engelmeyer, our guest. Back to the phones we go. Mia, thank you for being so patient. You're on.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for taking my call. I am actually calling from SUNY Albany, and I was just curious to have Ms. Engelmeyer go into some detail on the Perkins loans, because Chuck Schumer did just come to our campus, and I wasn't able to go to the press conference, but I would love for her to talk about what's changing in that policy and what it means for financial aid future and stuff.
So I only know a little bit about this, which is probably kind of a dangerous place to be.
Oh, yeah. Don't worry. It happens in Studio A from time to time. So
okay,
go with it.
Then I won't stop. Perkins Loan, in the world of what we call, it's called FFELP, which is the Federal Family Education Loan Program. And that's kind of the umbrella term for all federal student loans. So there's this, what used to be called the Stafford Loan, which is now not called that anymore. Perkins fell under that. The PLUS loan, which is the parent loan for undergraduate students, also falls under that umbrella. Perkins really has been the best gig going. The interest rate on a Perkins loan is capped at 5%, and it is interest-free for students who qualify during the in-school period. What used to be the Stafford Loan, which is now called the Federal Direct Student Loan, often still called the Stafford Loan, is the largest of the student loan programs. You can get that regardless of your financial circumstances. The question for the formerly Stafford Loan is whether or not you qualify for the in-school interest subsidy. But anyone can get that loan. But that interest rate is tied to the yearly T-bill rate and fluctuates, but will never go above 8.25%. Perkins is capped at 5. And so Perkins really has been the best gig going, but it is much more limited in its availability than Stafford. So Stafford's really been the biggie. I have heard talk that they are going to be eliminating the Perkins loan. I don't know how far down the pipeline is for that to come to fruition. It would be a shame because it really is such a great deal. But honestly, other than having heard that they may fold that program, I can't comment a whole lot more than that.
Right, right. And I believe that's why he came here to show his support for it. But yeah, thank you so much for the information.
Hey,
thank
Mia,
you.
Thank you for the call. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. Linnell Engelmeyer is our guest. Harv in Kingston, are you still there?
I am here.
You're on.
Well, hello, Ray, and guest.
Hello.
On Friday, I attended one of these economic development meetings in the Hudson Valley, and the guest speaker was the president of SUNY Dutchess Community College. And she came prepared with a whole PowerPoint presentation about education in New York State. And one of the things that she talked about was the insanely low graduation, high school graduation rate. Another thing that she talked about was the even worse failure rate of people getting out of the community colleges, you know, from those who entered. It was like 33% of those who enter community colleges coming out with an AA. So the reason I'm calling is I'm wondering if there's a conversation going on in higher education about trying to have some standards before kids go right into college. I'm all for open enrollment and diversity. I'm a child of the 60s, but something is really wrong when everybody, just about everybody, is being directed to go to college, and the failure rate is so high, and it's obviously for many people just a time-killing event for them. And it's a humongous waste of the public's resources. What are your thoughts about that?
I don't disagree with all of you, what you said. However, I'm going to sort of use caution when you use the word failure rate. I have a feeling what the president of Dutchess County Community College may have been referring to is the graduation rate, because that does sound like the correct statistic. And a graduation rate of, let's say, 33% and a failure rate of then, you know, 67% or whatever, are two totally different things.
So in other words, people might go for a year and then move on?
People might go for a year. So maybe I'll decide to go to, you know, HVCC for a year to save some money to do some, you know, intro level classes before I move on to someplace more expensive. The reality, I think, is that there are not as many people transferring from a two-year to a four-year degree as maybe the educational community would like, but I also think it is increasing in prevalence. I will tell you that if you look at the statistics on graduation rates of colleges across the board, they are shockingly low. You know, other than those few uber competitive schools at the top, they would probably really surprise you for any real host of reasons. You know, some of it may be lack of direction. Some of it may be that, you know, people are getting jobs. My son and I were having a conversation about a very, very, very elite music school, not Juilliard, where a lot of the kids don't graduate. But
it must be Berkeley.
It is Curtis, actually. But they don't graduate because oftentimes they are offered major, really high-powered jobs before the 4 years are out. So I will tell you that there's probably more to that statistic than initially meets the eye, but I don't think you're wrong. And one of the issues has been remedial education and using community colleges to provide some of the remedial work before kids can move on to a four-year school. It's a very, very big issue, and it does get some discussion. Has any real headway been made on that discussion? I'm not sure about that.
Okay, well, your points are certainly well taken, you know, about the stats. And I know that I think a majority of the students in the SUNY community college system are actually what we would consider adults. That is people 25 and over, not people coming right out of the high schools. So people going back into school, you know, going to another college after they go to the community colleges, you're absolutely correct. I'm just so concerned about, you know, so many people just going into these community colleges, languishing there, and then just doing nothing there. It's almost like a year of college is needed for so many people before they go into the community colleges to make that experience meaningful and productive for them. That's just my thought on it.
I think a year of something is needed. I'm not sure what. You know, in some countries there's mandatory military service, and you know, or either military service or you know, some kind of commitment
public,
to the country.
Public service.
Service. And is that the worst thing in the world? I think a lot of those young people leave that with a better sense of direction and some skills. Yeah, and maturity.
Harv, thanks for the call. Well, I mean, his point, though, is an interesting one, that the timeline of people who are in the state colleges, and I don't know if Harv's numbers are right, but if there are more people in their 20s just starting out, maybe that says a lot about getting some life experience, doing some other things. But the question I'll ask you when we get back from the break is, you're fresh out of high school. You have all the rudiments, let's say, all those math skills and everything. They can fade rather quickly, as we all know, mm-hmm. those of us who have been through school, you forget a lot of things. Is there a flip side to getting that life experience, and does it hold you back when you want to go to school, say, a little bit later? And we'll ask that question of Linnell Engelmeyer coming up. The number to call if you want to join in the conversation, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop. We'll be right back.
WAMC comes from Northshire Bookstore, hosting Simon Van Boy for his book, Tales of Accidental Genius, Tuesday, November 17th in Manchester, Vermont, northshire.com. Pave Tile Wood and Stone, using French artisan techniques to manufacture pre-finished oak floors, decorative and terracotta tile, and importing aged French limestone, showroom by appointment and online, pavetile.com. Bodhi Spa, Yoga and Salon, Hudson, with a full-service hair care salon offering colors, cuts, and blowouts, open daily, BodhiHolisticSpa.com. The Department of Theater Arts at SUNY New Paltz, presenting a gender-bending Shakespeare's Julius Caesar, staged in an all-girls prep academy, November 12th through 22nd, newpaltz.edu/theater. And Interim Healthcare, proud supporter of the Mohawk Hudson Land Conservancy's New Bethlehem Preserve, the Van Dyke, opening to the public Monday, November 16th at 10 a.m., mohawkhudson.org for info and directions.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551, the telephone number. Ray Graff here, joined by Linnell Engelmeyer. An interesting conversation. Our last caller alluded to older people, older kids, older adults starting out in college. And I wonder, are there any numbers offhand, and I'm putting you on the spot here, of success rates for those who start a little bit later?
You know, I don't know about the success rates. I do know that probably about 15, 20 years ago, traditional four-year schools started to make a much more substantial effort to go after what they refer to as adult learners because they realized, you know, the workforce was changing, that these people were a market that was very much open and available to go after. And so they have, for probably close to two decades, been kind of a large audience that schools have sought to go after and tailor, even traditional undergraduate, you know, 18 schools focused on the traditional undergraduate population have really, many of them have tried to mold programs to adult learners.
Our number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Let's go over to Susan in Albany. Susan.
Hi there.
Hi.
I'm calling because I wanted to ask about kind of late now, but our daughter had gone to a private out-of-state four-year college she got into, and she worked very hard to get to it and actually transferred there because she wanted to go to this school. She got a degree in something she could never get a job at. I wanted her not to do it. It was over $40,000 a year in tuition, and we paid it for her to get a degree, which I knew she could never get a job in. And it was like archaeology with, I don't even know what it was. It was ridiculous. And No, it was anthropology. Anthropology and some other thing that unless you had one out of a billion chances of going to, you know, as a college professor, there's no way you would get a job in it.
Mm.
I felt really it was criminal for them to allow her to get a degree in this. I felt it was absolutely wrong when it was so obvious you could never, ever get a career in it. She's been struggling in all the years since then and never did get a career, of course, in anything related to it. Now may get into the airline field, but has done just about everything. And so that's my first question. Why would college advisors and people in, you know, that are, why would they allow a degree in something that they know is to me, it seems criminal.
Yes.
And then the second part of my question is, all of her friends, a lot of them, are going on to graduate school. Seems like they all went on to graduate school, and she wanted to do that also. And I said, no, you can't do that because there's no way you're going to get, I'm not going to pay for any more schooling in more careers, in more areas that don't give you a job.
Oh, boy.
But I did notice that a lot of her friends continue to get to go to grad school. What do you think about that? With all these kids going to grad school, doesn't that make you another one of the pack? Where, you know, it doesn't make you valuable because everybody's doing it.
Well, it beats working. Right?
So those are my two questions.
Okay.
Well, and again, I mean, what you said is exactly one of the reasons that I try to encourage the students I work with to look at the sort of the prospects in a given field so that you know what your likelihood of getting a job is. You know, I think that having a school not allow a student to pursue something that interests them opens a whole can of worms because essentially I think you would create a system where, you know, probably some completely skewed percentage of students would all be engineers or other STEM majors, which, you know, maybe would be a good thing for the country, but certainly wouldn't be right for every student. And so I think to put the onus on the school, I mean, certainly I think there really should be some degree of awareness about job prospects. But I think
they did not make her aware. I feel they did lead her down the primrose path with that. You know, because I kept saying, "What is the job outlet?" You know, this can't. Oh no, I'm gonna get a job. This is, you know, they're telling me you can get a job. So I guess you're right. I mean, it should be something where they, and you're right. You can't really, you know, but you should be honest about it and say, "Look, if you can afford to go to school because this is something you want to just learn about, that's great." But if you're looking at this from a job perspective, it's really a different story.
Hmm.
And I don't think that was really ever disclosed.
I think in a lot of places it's probably not. I think you're probably right.
Well, Susan, that's a kind of a distressing story, and best of luck. Thanks for calling.
What about the second part of the question?
Go ahead.
Which is the graduate student. I mean, my hope would be that for students that are not finding the jobs that they would like out of the starting gate, unless that the graduate degree is a credential to entry into that field, honestly, I think that's another area where either a community college or some type of more technical training would really not be a bad choice.
Right. That seems to make sense to me, too. I just wondered your opinion about what you think about all these kids, not just, you know, in my case with my daughter, but what you think about all these kids, because I see all of her friends seem to go on to grad school. It doesn't, from what I'm seeing, they don't seem to be able, half of them can't even get into grad school because they're all hiding in grad school. The grad schools are getting even real tough, you know, with letting them in. And I just thought, you know, what do you think about that as a way of getting in the job market?
You know, I think that as the bachelor's degree has become a more commonplace credential, many employers are now looking to the graduate degree. And so, you know, is there some logic on the part of the student to say, oh, well, I'll get the job when I go there? You know, one of the things that I really encourage parents to do, and that as a parent I have done myself, is that we've been very upfront with our children. Like, here's what we have saved. It is yours for your education, and it can go as far as you'd like. So, you know, if you choose to go to a SUNY school, you will have money left for graduate school. If, you know, if you don't, then there will be student loans involved. And so we've been very upfront with our kids, and it's something that I encourage parents to do.
Susan, thanks a lot for the call. Over to Mary in, where are you calling from, Mary?
Granby, Massachusetts.
Ah, Granby. Well, you're on.
Okay. With the gentleman for the community college, he had said that he thought it was a lot of children dropping out or a lot of adults dropping out. Well, what everybody seems to be overlooking is the economic downturn of the last 15 or so years. And also, we've got this global initiative going on, which is taking a lot of jobs from our children within the country. And another thing that I've run into, I have three with master's degree, and I've got two that are having a hard time finding jobs or have gone through 3 to 5 jobs already. And they're not telling you that the human resources aren't in these companies that you're applying to, that they're farmed out. And half of the people that are handling human resource to get into a particular job in this country don't even know what most of the fields are and what they're trying to actually get into. I had my son run into that mess, and then he solved it himself.
Yikes.
Now, and also they have where they financially, they have to start letting, like I was first generation educated with my oldest daughter.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm from a family of 12, and I didn't, so ignorant, it was ridiculous on what my children's needs were. They have to start with the actual, what do they call them, in the school that prepare them. I'm trying to think of the name of them, but they have to start within the school itself. Start in 9th grade instead of the 12th grade exit data for going to college. Because if you're not first, if you're first generation, you're not going to know all the data you need to know for 12th grade.
Well, you got that right.
They give them the exit thing instead. And in middle class America, as it was, a lot of us were ignorant in a lot of areas, and a lot of us worked in factories and did other things. Now it's all education. We're trying to take and go with the flow of the global initiative, which is shortchanging our own children. And yes, they should start with the community college, but what areas have to do is pour more money into the community college so these children can go for free if they're able to.
I like
my
it.
Children worked all kinds of jobs in addition. Thank God they're smart. They all had A's in addition, working full-time jobs all the way through college. And they went to good schools, but then you come out, I had the one that went to the Elms, and then she went to Bay Path, and she was the first one and went to community college. Well, if you have a second kid,
yeah,
and you've blown all your savings and money on your first kid, it sort of puts the second kid in a more precarious situation.
You got that
and
right, Mary. But listen, you got
right.
A question for Linnell? Because we have to move it along, but you make great points.
Well, my question to her would be, why aren't they putting more money into the schools?
Okay.
Here, the community college, like in 9th grade, I believe you should start preparing the parents, calling in situations with the parents.
I think you make points. However, I think that's another show entirely than what we're doing today. But thank you, Mary. Your points are well taken. Over to Ted in Albany. Ted.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thanks. I really don't have a question. I've listened to some of your show. I just caught the last half hour of it. And I just wanted to mention quickly, there's an excellent book out there called That Used to Be Us,
yeah,
by Michael Friedman.
Okay.
And I just wanted to get that out there in case any listeners wanted to read that book. It talks about what you guys are talking about, how, you know, the U.S. faces like a double threat in the sense that they've got to, you know, bring the minority graduation rate in high school up to, you know, like right now, I think 30 or 40% dropout nationwide. So you've got to bring that level up. And then you've also got to, you know, catch up to the standards of all the other countries. So it's a double threat,
yeah,
that you've got to address.
And again, you make great points, but that's another show. We appreciate it. And Linnell, we're going to get you involved in this program if it kills us. Let's go to Bill in Queensbury. Bill.
Hi. When my kids were in high school, all I heard from these financial aid advisors who'd come visit is, fill out the FAFSA form. You got to fill out the FAFSA form. Do your FAFSA form. Well, I don't know anybody that ever got a penny of financial aid. So do people have kind of an unrealistic expectation of, you know, that there's all this, you know, financial aid money out there? I mean, I think for kind of ordinary middle-class people, you know, you really, that is completely unrealistic, right?
So I'm going to answer that by telling you what I suggest to people. Because, you know, if you wait until you fill out a financial aid form, see what the results are, you know, in maybe the 2 months before your kid has to make a decision, you're really not given a lot of time to think this through and plan out for all contingencies.
What could I possibly do?
What,
you know,
I,
like reduce
what I
my
like,
income 10 years
well,
out?
Well, let me tell you what I like is, okay. I made reference before to a website called finaid.org.
Yeah.
They have a link on there that says calculators, and then there's a link on there that says expected family contribution calculator.
Yeah,
there are other websites that have expected family contribution calculators.
Yeah, most middle-class people, the financial aid they're going to get is zero.
Well, I don't know that for middle-class...
The only money I ever saw for education was money that the institutions that my kids applied for offered as scholarships.
Okay.
Well, but that...
You know, merit scholarships.
There are both need-based, and I don't know how old you are. For my age, when I went to college, it costs a whole lot less than it does now. And so people now may be eligible for either institutional, state, or federal aid. And I think filling out an expected family contribution calculator is a great way to begin to really educate yourself about where you may stand.
Bill, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go over to Barbara in Albany. Barbara.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm glad to be here. I wanted to ask your guest about her thoughts on the situation of adjuncts in higher education.
Well, and for people that aren't really familiar with this, there's a bit of controversy over the use of adjunct faculty, which,
a bit, yes.
Which and Barbara, you can correct me if I'm representing this incorrectly, but basically it's a way for colleges to save money by not hiring full-time tenure track faculty members.
They actually make like $43 million on adjuncts, average. That's the average. I have all the statistics. 75% of classes are now taught by adjuncts and contingents.
Right, because
25% of them are on public assistance.
With all due respect, is this sort of the topic?
It's certainly not my area of expertise. I do know that it is an area of concern, but I don't have enough knowledge to really comment further than that.
The only reason it's an area of concern is because I know a lot of educators, and I've been in college education a long time, and I understand that a lot of us are feeling like, how can we encourage our students in education if our education only brings poverty-level wages?
Okay. All right. Well, you know what?
That's
you
a
make
good point.
A point. Thank you very much for the call. Kevin in Newton. Kevin, you're on.
Hi. I just wanted to put something out there that I think speaks to some things people were talking about. I'm a graduate at this point. I have a BA. But I wanted to ask what your guest, you know, thinks about the notion that a lot of people might want to go to school without a career in mind, that they want to pursue all the things that higher education has to offer, that it toots its own horn about.
You hit the nail on the head. So many kids are like that, and you only have about a minute and a half.
You really do, and I'll tell you, I think that what speaks to that is that there are kind of a nice handful, it's probably not more than a handful, but a nice handful of colleges that no longer have any kind of core curriculum. The theory being that you will do best in that which you really enjoy. So, for example, if you look at a Wesleyan University, Brown University, University of Rochester has sort of part of this system where they have either no core requirements or very, very loose ones to allow kids to explore what they want and do what they like for exactly that reason. I think for people, spending a whole lot of money might still be a hard sell for some, and it's certainly not commonplace. Will it increase in prevalence? I can't answer that.
Great call. Thanks a lot. I think we're just about out of time. The only problem with that, and I thought Kevin's point was that most kids who take that first step in the door at college really don't have a true clue what they want to do.
Well, and even if they say they have a clue, 75% of them will change their majors at least one time.
So then I think that speaks to the necessity of a core curriculum.
Well, and a lot of people will tell you that, A, that's why they do it, and B, you know, we talked before about skills that employers want, and, you know, the core curriculum often speaks to classes that develop those skills.
Well, Linnell, we're out of time. That was it became a very kind of off-the-rails program for you, but you'll be back again.
And, I certainly hope
we'll
so.
We'll do one more time. Support comes from Real Seafood Company, Wolf Road Colony, offering a new musically-themed Sunday brunch, realseafoodco.com/brunch for menu. Albany Realty Group, local woman-owned real estate company since 2003, educating and counseling sellers and buyers throughout the real estate transaction, albanyrealtygroup.com. The Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, maintaining 32 miles of trails throughout the Lake George region for hiking, birding, and outdoor exploration, hikelakegeorge.com. And Apex Solar Power, Queensbury, New York, locally owned, installing solar panels, solar hot water, solar pool heating, apexsolarpower.com for information. Thanks again to Linnell Engelmeyer for being here. Thanks to all the callers. Very interesting show. These shows can often go in their own direction, and that's what Vox Pop is all about. Thanks to Zach Malloy for handling the controls. Your phones were answered by Hunter the intern. I forget his last name, but we'll find out for the next show. Tomorrow on Vox Pop, it's Birding with Rich Guthrie. Oh, boy. News coming up.